Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The race is on, and Formula One's epic world championship battle between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton will be decided in a six-race run-in over the next 8 weeks. But with just 6 points separating them, who is the favourite, and what will be the key factors that decide the destiny of the title fight that will be fought out in the USA, Mexico, Brazil, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Abu Dhabi? I'm Ed Stewart, and joining me to run the rule over this epic battle are Gary Anderson and Mark Hughes. Well, Mark, how are you doing? Enjoying this brief moment of respite before it all gets going with this frenetic finale?
Yeah, a little bit of respite. Quite a lot of form filling, as I'm sure you know, to get into America for Austin and all the extra COVID preparations for that. But yeah, it's an epic fight we've got coming up in six races in 8 weeks. So yeah, it's going to be quick fire, but dramatic, I'm sure.
As long as it's not an epic fight with US immigration, which sometimes it can be to get into the country for us. And Gary, no such dramas for you with battling to get into the USA, but it's just great, isn't it? We've got just so much to look forward to in these final races. I'm just hoping it does go down to that last lap of the last race.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, I hope it goes down to a good on-track battle to the last lap of the last race, because that's really what we all want to see. And I can sit in the pleasure of my settee here in the living room and watch it and criticise whatever's going on, because that's always easier to do from home. But yeah, I mean, I hope it doesn't turn out to be, you know, the last few races like a Silverstone episode or a Monza episode. I hope it's an on-track battle. And I genuinely hope that Bottas and Perez and maybe a few others actually join in that battle. So it's not just a two-horse race. You know, we'd actually see a bit of skullduggery going on as to who can get the most out of it and who can take most points from other people as well. So it'll be interesting to see, because that becomes a lot more team tactics whenever there's more drivers involved in it. But yeah, I think it's going to be, as Mark says, six races in 8 weeks is going to be a bit of a slog.
Yeah, very much so, especially with that triple header with the geographically coherent Mexico, Brazil, Qatar trip, which is an interesting one. I'm looking forward to doing those three. I booked all my travel. Not quite as complicated as it might have been, but still not the ideal. But let's get into it. What we're going to do is break the title fight down into its component parts. So we're going to start off looking at the drivers, Mark. So Verstappen's 6 points ahead. Hamilton's the one with the experience of title fights. Who would you say has done the best job so far of those two? And who would you expect to thrive best in the intensity of this running?
Yeah, well, I think most of the, if you look at the season to date, rather than the big pressure races we've got coming up, I'd say most of the time they've each maximized their car, but not always, but most of the time. So take aside the contentious issue Silverstone and Monza collisions, because you could argue that ad infinitum. I'd say Hamilton has more often dropped the ball. Not often, but more often. He's also delivered some brilliant performances, such as at Bahrain, where he won with a slower car, or Portugal, where he won through being smart and how he was using the tyres. But even as recently as Istanbul, there was a tentative in battle. He was caught between the need to attack and the need not to get involved in skirmishes. You saw that with his dice with Tsunoda, and even a little bit with Perez. Verstappen's approach is a bit more binary, and that's been serving him really well. So I think just on that basis, but not on ultimately who's faster or better, just on their score sheets this season to date, I'd edge it to Verstappen. But yes, Hamilton's been in many title showdowns. Well, he's not so many showdowns. He's been in title. He's won championships. He's won more championships than anybody else. And sometimes they've involved those sort of late season showdowns. He's been probably better in those situations than Michael Schumacher used to be, who could always get a little bit flighty and nervy and prone to mistakes. But I'd say I don't think the fact that it's Max's first time in a situation is really going to have an effect on him. As I say, he just seems so binary, just does his job in one way and just seems so airtight. There's no ambiguity in his approach, I don't think. And I'd be surprised if this pressure introduced that, because I think he will just go about the job in exactly the same way he always has done.
I think that you're right there. I mean, Max, well, all the drivers always say, you know, we'll take it sort of one race at a time and see what happens. And I think Max is very good at that. He actually does, as you say, just take the next race that's coming up. He'll do his best job possible. He'll fight for that win. And he knows that if he scores more points than Lewis, he's doing a good job for the championship. Whereas I think Lewis, as you say, has won lots of championships. But he's not going to necessarily get the opportunity again to win an eighth. You know, so I think the pressure is as much on Lewis to win his eighth championship as for Max to win his first, because Max will have an opportunity probably to win one later on in his career. But as I say, I think Max does take each race weekend just as an individual event. And if the points mount up to the end of the year, the championship's his, then that's job done. But I don't think he's driving for the championship.
Yeah, I do think Verstappen's been quite impressive in the way he's dealt with it this year. The only question mark I have is how he responds to the inevitable ramp up of pressure as you get down to the end point. That's not because of any particular doubts about it. It's just we haven't seen him in that exact situation before. But he's saying all the right things, doing all the right things. Even I thought Turkey was just a really good weekend, because the Red Bull wasn't a winning car that weekend. He didn't get carried away in the race. Or I can imagine some drivers in that situation would have felt that Bottas wasn't too far out of reach and maybe overdone it trying to do something about winning. But he knew what the car could do. He did it and he banked that important second place. And I think that's been probably a strength for Verstappen this year, hasn't it? He's known when there's chances to win, and generally he's managed to win when there have been. But he's also quite good at banking those supporting results. And as I always like to say, you do win championships on your bad days. But Mark, if you were to sort of speculate, do you see any cracks in Verstappen that might open under the extra pressure? I guess the big question is if there are cross swords on track, shall we say, whether he's quite consistent in his approach, which again I think as you say has served him well. But do you think there's any potential weakness that could open there, or is it just whatever, if there is one, it's not something we've seen any sign of yet?
Yeah, I don't think it's a weakness as such, but yes, it's still the potential to. For his approach to land him in trouble if it gets wheel to wheel and you're in the lap of the gods, whether you come out of any incident like that, still going and with your position not damaged, or whether you're in the gravel trap and what happens to your rival. So it's, yeah, that's where it might go wrong, because I don't think he will compromise in any 50-50 situation. And that's got the potential for trouble, but I don't see it as a, if it happens like that, I don't think it would be a pressure error. I think it'll just be a situation in where Max has again refused to back out of the 50-50.
Gary, it'd be interesting to get your insight on drivers and how they react to the kind of pressure moments. You've worked with many drivers over the years, some world champions, some very big names. I tend to see it that the best tend to thrive in those situations. It's not that they do better when under pressure, it's just that they can still deliver at their best when under pressure, whereas others can kind of wilt or get too grabby. How do you see it in terms of how drivers respond to that thing? Is there a big difference between the great ones and the merely good?
Yeah, there is. And I think, you know, you can relate it back to other sports, a bit like tennis or golf, where it's an individual player playing an individual game. You know, when you see them sort of tighten up at the 18th hole with a 2-point lead or whatever, or on tennis, you know, they're just that last serve for the match, you can see them tighten up. And for a driver, I think it's the same thing. I think probably, you know, when you get to the beginning of a race as such, it's not too bad because the race is still to come. It's those last 3 or 4 or 5 laps whenever maybe somebody's, you know, coming at you from behind and you have to just make sure you're doing the right thing all the time and not make a mistake. That's the biggest pressure time, I think, for any driver. And there's drivers that can cope with that. You know, they know they're driving in their zone, I suppose you might call it. The worst thing to do is with any of them is slow down because you make mistakes. If you're not driving in your zone, not getting the flow going, then suddenly it becomes a different deal altogether. But I've seen young drivers being able to handle it and do it, you know, as well as experienced drivers. I don't think it comes as a natural thing to anybody how you take that pressure on. Well, you take that pressure on and it actually makes you thrive. Circumstances, situations, whenever you're running in the wet and stuff like that, whenever there's such a big chance that you can easily throw it off the road just by hitting a little river of water or a damp patch or whatever, you know, those are the things you've got to try to eliminate. And those are the things that I think, if you look at Max and Lewis, both of them are quite good at eliminating those things. You know, if you look through the whole season, there's been mistakes. But I think I would also say that Lewis has made more mistakes than Max Verstappen, just in those little areas where there's, you know, there's potential to make a little error. That all mounts up. And obviously we're going into these next three races where USA, Mexico and Brazil, which are important tracks because Mexico and Brazil are pretty good for Max in the past and Red Bull, obviously. But America's been very good for Lewis. So it's about how it unfolds, I think, going into those last few races. If there's still a very small points advantage for either driver, I think then, you know, they will have that pressure on in the last few laps, and it will be difficult to withstand it because as the end of the season come the last few races, and you have to make them count.
Exactly. And when you get to that final end game, sometimes it can make drivers do strange things, as we saw from the DTM finale last weekend, for example. I don't see any evidence that Hamilton or Verstappen will get involved in that kind of thing, but you never know. That's like you mentioned, Mark, with Schumacher kind of going a little bit over the top occasionally when that pressure's on.
Yeah, I think it's... The situation where fate just puts the two cars relative to each other is going to end up being the thing which applies or doesn't apply the pressure. So whether it's decided in a pressure situation or not, I think it just isn't so much down to the traits of the drivers as just to where the two cars are going to end up relative to each other in these remaining six races.
It's also going to be down to some of the others that are going to get involved in it. I mean, there's a lot of drivers out there that are potentially capable of getting amongst it now, and you know they're fighting for a good result before the end of the season, not necessarily a championship. So it's about the discipline of looking after these two are obviously potential championship winners, but they've got to make sure they look after themselves and know who their fight's with, because somebody else could be involved in it very, very quickly, and that puts a whole new dimension to the pressure and the discipline and the understanding, as I say, of who you're fighting with, really.
Yeah, especially when those third parties always know that the championship contenders have a championship to look at and they will try and take advantage of that. It's a good point about the roles that the cars will play. That will probably be the most significant factor in terms of the pace race to race and who can do what. So, Gary, Mercedes W12, that's been the quickest car over the last three events. The Red Bull RB16B has won more races. on average in dry conditions, Mercedes is actually now by a tiny margin the quicker car on average, but it's so close. So which would you say is the stronger car on balance?
Since Silverstone, I think you'd have to say the Mercedes has got that little edge. We've always criticised Red Bull, I think, in the past of starting the season starting the season not as good as it should have done. And I think this year is no exception. I mean, obviously there's a controversy of this changes to the floor, and the low-rate cars, the Mercedes and the Aston Martin, felt that the regulation change was helped. The high-rate cars like the Red Bull and all the rest, to be honest. But when Red Bull had that advantage at the beginning of the year, they didn't actually sort of make hay while the sun shone. They missed out, really. Those first four races, by the time they got to coming out of Spain, Lewis was 14 points ahead of Max. And that's probably, you know, where they if they do lose a championship, that's probably where they lost it, because they should have been better than that at that point in time, because Mercedes were struggling with car performance. Red Bull definitely in pretty good condition, and they didn't take the best out of it. So as it's unfolded now, I mean, I think Austria 2, Max was, 32 points in the lead? So that was a massive lead, but he lost it very, very quickly. And it just shows you that, you know, the Silverstone episode, and then Hungary, obviously a lesser episode, but still an episode, took away big points. So I'd say at the moment, to be honest, the two cars are as close to each other as you could ever imagine them being. Through the season, we saw Red Bull have advantages, we saw Mercedes have advantages. But right now, I think that the two of them are very, very close. And it's going to be down to, you know, you keep putting development parts in the car, you keep changing how the car works that little bit, and you have to find your feet again. These last six races are going to have very little development parts. There isn't much time in six races in 8 weeks to do much. So how they arrive in the USA, from there on in, it will be about the team getting the best out of the package every weekend. And I don't think there's any team in the pit lane that actually gets 100% out of their car every weekend, or any weekend. So it's going to be who gets the best out of it and who gets the best understanding. And by not changing the car development-wise, changing how it sort of operates, you're going to see the team that's got the best preparation back at base, the best simulations, the best ability to sort of adapt different setups to the car to try and maximise its performance with no development parts. So it's going to be a very interesting six races. But I think right now, if I was to flick a coin, I'd say both cars were, you know, probably on a perfect day within a tenth of a second of each other. And that's great for the championship. I mean, that's what it's all about. But we keep on getting this fighting between the two teams about who's doing what and who's doing things that they shouldn't do and whatever. And the straight line speed thing is a big part of it. Mexico's obviously somewhere where straight line speed down that long straight is very important. It's the altitude, so it's a whole different deal altogether. But I still feel there's quite a lot in the low rake and the high rake as far as how the diffuser stalls. I think the Mercedes diffuser probably stalls earlier than the Red Bull because of the rake. So actually they get a drag reduction because of that down the straights. The Red Bull, because of the higher rear ride height, probably stalls less. It should stall less because the gap to the ground is bigger. It stays bigger. It's not as though they run a lot softer rear end in the car and the car gets to exactly the same ride height. So I think the diffuser stall in the Mercedes is greater. I think the developments they did at Silverstone with the making the floor work harder at the front with the turning vanes and stuff that they did actually increases the diffuser stall, because it means that, you know, you're extracting more airflow out from underneath the floor early on, so the diffuser should stall earlier. And I think that's been their big straight line speed advantage in the last few races. So maybe Red Bull will latch onto something like that. But I don't think they can do it that quickly with no development really going on, and with the fact that the car concepts are quite different. So I think Red Bull are going to suffer the straight line speed problem for the rest of the season. Maybe they can shut it down a little bit by running less wing on the car. But it's going to be difficult for them as far as that's concerned. So they've got to have a faster car around the corners.
And Mark, bringing you in on this, you did quite a deep dive on the numbers and the performance characteristics for a written piece on the race website entitled Mark Hughes, Verstappen Right to Worry About Mercedes Trend, if anybody wants to have a look at that. You touched on a lot of the things that Gary was talking about there in terms of the characteristics, but what were your conclusions in terms of the way this battle is swinging?
I think Istanbul made the decisive call on just whether that had swung since that Silverstone upgrade Gary was talking about. And it wasn't really clear up until that point, because after Silverstone, we had Hungary, where Red Bull was in all sorts of bother and the whole field closed up to Red Bull. So that they were in real bother there with trying to get the car balanced around that big rear wing of theirs. And they ended up having to surrender downforce there going into the Saturday. So that wasn't really, you weren't seeing a Red Bull in its representative form. Then we went to Spa, which we didn't get to see that play out fully. Then Zandvoort, which should have been a Red Bull track and was. Then Monza, which should have been a Mercedes track and was. And then Sochi, again, Max didn't do a qualifying time. It wasn't clear cut there. So Istanbul was, we thought, right, there's no reason why inherently one should be better than the other here. And yet you saw Bottas out-qualify and out-perform Verstappen in the race quite comfortably. So that, I can see why they're concerned. And that's what Max alluded to. He said, we've just come from a few tracks where Mercedes should have been better, but here, you know, there's no reason for them to be, but there were. So, yeah, I think we've got to step it up a bit. So he's thinking in terms of we need to find more pace. So I think that's the big concern at Red Bull. But how big it is in these remaining tracks, I don't know. There's also the concern at Mercedes of power unit reliability. So, you know, they're probably going to have to take another engine penalty that won't be as costly as the last one. There's a lot of things going into the mix. Sort of an infinite number of ways it could play out.
Yeah, that's the really positive thing. And it's probably within the scope of how well the drivers and teams get the most out of the car they've got. It is interesting the points you make about engine changes. And obviously Mercedes had their engine change at Turkey with Hamilton. The V6 was changed. But it was interesting that after the race, Toto Wolff said he doesn't think that this is going to be a championship decided by 4 or 5 points. It's going to be decided by DNFs, which I thought was quite an interesting one, because there haven't been a huge amount of DNFs, certainly not reliability based ones, but obviously things like the engine changes are done to prevent the DNFs from happening. So that's quite an interesting little factor. But connected to the cars, Mark, are the circuits. So we should probably apply the car characteristics to the tracks. Got six left. Austin, arguably the kind of most appealing track for the Mercedes of the remaining six, certainly of that next three. But how do you see each of the six tracks that are to come in terms of who, if anyone, they favour?
Austin historically is very good for Mercedes, but we shouldn't write off Red Bull there, because historically Red Bull hasn't had as good a car as this when we arrived at Austin. So I don't think that's a nailed-on Mercedes one, but yeah, they're probably marginally the favourites for that one. Mexico, because of the configuration of the turbo, there's something about that just doesn't work in high altitude on the Mercedes, and Mercedes has got going into Mexico with low expectations. So that should, there's all sorts of things can happen. The weather can play tricks. But just on form, on the form book, you'd say that should be a Red Bull track. Interlagos is historically very good for Red Bull too, although, there's so many different ways, because of the track layout at Interlagos, so many different ways you can get the lap time there. Again, I would think that's probably going to be very closely matched. Qatar, obviously we haven't been to before. Looking at the layout, it looks quite Red Bull friendly to me. It doesn't look as though there's a long stretch where the Mercedes drag advantage can really do some damage. It looks quite Red Bull friendly. Saudi, you'd say the opposite. The Saudi, you'd say, has got a lot of flat out running and looks like very much Mercedes territory. And Abu Dhabi has historically been, last year the Red Bull was faster there, and that wasn't as good a car as this year's Red Bull. So I think that's anybody's race as well. So yeah, it's you couldn't call it.
Gary, obviously you've been to races where you'll have an idea of how your car should compare to your immediate competitors, whether it's a good one, bad one. Is there a way to kind of find strengths in the car that haven't previously been shown if you really work at it? Or is it just about accepting where the weaknesses are, particularly with a car that you've run as much as Red Bull and Mercedes have this year, and just have to play to the existing strengths and mitigate the weaknesses?
I think you have to, play to the existing strengths. You have to optimize the car around what the car is good at doing. Any race meeting is only as competitive as your competitors. You have to just beat them. It doesn't matter what happened in the past. It's about that weekend in general. So, you never know going there. All you can do is your job in the best way possible. You obviously have got some data from the tracks that you're going to from last year, so you can look at it and sort of try to put yourself in a position where last year these were our problems. How do we address them? You want to make sure you keep the good points of the car, and try to tidy up the not so good points of the car. Try to get yourself optimized a little bit, where you're not using the negative parts of the car so much, i.e., slow corners. If you have a car that's got a bit of inherent understeer in slow corners, try to make the best out of it. Try to minimize that as best possible, but make sure you don't suffer in the high speed corners just because you've pursued everything in the low speed corners to try to make the car have a better front end. So you'll always try to do that, and that comes from past experience. And I think, as Mark says, I think these last six races, it's nip and tuck between any of them. In the past, some of the cars were, the Mercedes was good at one track and Red Bull at another one. But I don't think you can take that into this year, because Red Bull in general have a better car. But Red Bull last year finished the season very competitively. So it is a lottery going into it. And again, I'll say there's other cars out there, as we've seen, that can mix it with them. And those are the ones that are going to count and take points on a Sunday afternoon. As far as active out-and-out performance is concerned, lap time for qualifying, again, it's nobody has the right to be on pole this year, which is good. There is other people out there that can do it. Bottas wants to finish his season at Mercedes strongly. Yes, I'm sure he will help Hamilton if the occasion arises. But, it's one of these sort of situations of, if Bottas is leading the race and Verstappen second and Hamilton third, what does Bottas do? Does he take those points? But Verstappen will still score more than Hamilton. So to back that all up and make it into a race will be interesting to see. But that's the big thing that's going to play out in the strategy. It's not going to be so much the individual race. It's going to be about recognising your opposition and making sure you're competitive against them. And as I said earlier, any race meeting is just about beating the other people that are out there. There's no God-given right to be competitive. And there's nothing to take in from last year, to be honest.
There's also, Mark, a great deal of extra confounding factors, aren't there? There's the weather that could play a part, certainly in the first three weekends. I think the Middle East races, we can probably assume, are going to be dry because there's not a huge amount of rain around there. We've also got uncertain tracks, obviously Qatar and Saudi are tracks they've not run at before. Plus we've got the possibility there will be a few other teams on occasions being able to get involved with things at the front. So it does create this just fascinating landscape, doesn't it? There's no series of things you can point to say, yeah, this person, this team should win, all things being equal. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've seen quite a few occasions this year where one car or the other of the two has got a tyre advantage, and it's not, you can't say that the Red Bull's got a tyre advantage over the Mercedes or the Mercedes over the Red Bull of the season, but there have been particular races where one car has been better on the tyres, and that's been the race deciding factor. At Baku it was the Red Bull, at France it was the Red Bull, at Spain it was the Mercedes, and there's also different points at which they seem to struggle with a cold track and getting the temperature into the fronts quickly enough, and other times when the struggle is not abusing the rears so that they're still in good shape by the end of the lap. So it's in such a narrow window that it can just switch on or switch off one car or the other. So there's that. Particularly probably Austin, not so much Mexico, but certainly Austin and Brazil they could be just decided on track temperatures.
Yeah, and also when you've got two cars that are so close in terms of their underlying performance, any kind of small swing becomes a big swing, if you see what I mean. Whereas if you've got a car that's got a 0.5% advantage on average, then they can underachieve by 0.3%, and they're still comfortably out front. So that makes a difference. And I think that's going to be, again, it's going to be thrown all into sharp relief, these tiny little differences in those coming races. This podcast is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, which offers betting odds on Formula One, including this weekend's United States Grand Prix. At the time of recording, they have Lewis Hamilton as favourite for the race, but Max Verstappen isn't far behind. New customers to DraftKings Sportsbook can bet just $1 on the United States Grand Prix and win $100 in free bets if any driver finishes a lap. It would take an accident of Spa 1998 proportions for that one not to come off, and as far as we know, David Coulthard isn't going to make a comeback for this race to trigger such an accident. If Sportsbook isn't yet available in your part of the world, you can get in on the action with DraftKings free-to-play pools, where you can have a free shot at total prizes worth $5,000. To do that, you just have to answer some questions about what you think will happen during the United States Grand Prix, and then follow the race to track your results. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, and you can deposit and withdraw your winnings whenever you want to. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promotional code RACE, that's R-A-C-E, all capital letters, bet just $1 on the United States Grand Prix, and win $100 in free bets if any driver finishes a lap. That's promotional code RACE, R-A-C-E, for this no-brainer deal with DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 or older, NJ, IN or PA only. New customers only. The minimum deposit for the free bet promotion is $5, and that's limited to one per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. And remember, when the fun stops, stop. Well, Gary, we've talked about the cars, but how about the teams operationally? Mercedes is the team that has all the recent title-winning experience, but Red Bull's been there and done that, so which do you think has the edge in terms of getting the most from the car, executing the race as well, getting the strategy right?
Yeah, the strategy is the big thing, really, to be honest. As far as executing it's concerned, you know, if you can read the strategy correctly, then I think both teams can execute it pretty well. The change that we've had on the pit stop complexity, or the guns, and the fact that the guy operating the wheel gun has to press the button now to say the wheel's tight, has added a little bit of time to it, has added a little bit of confusion to it all. But I think most people are, you know, more or less on top of that now, if the system all works correctly. We saw last week, and I think Ferrari had a problem with the system working. It didn't really register the fact that the guy had pressed the button. But as far as Red Bull and Mercedes are concerned, you know, Red Bull, I think if you're driving into the pits, you'd have more confidence that Red Bull would be the quicker team, would just execute it more consistently, that little bit quicker, but not by much. I mean, you're talking tenth or two of a second, so nothing too dramatic. It's more the strategy of the race and reading the race correctly. I think that one thing we'd have to say is that I think Red Bull have been more, I believe Red Bull have been more black and white in their strategy. They've decided on a strategy, they've committed to it, they've done it, whether it's right or wrong, but they've gone with it. Whereas there always seems to be a bit of confusion about Mercedes' strategy. It's never quite just as black and white. And you know, especially, you know, Hamilton, I think, is a big part of that, the strategy reading. I think whenever we hear them on the radio, and we don't obviously hear everything, but when we hear them on the radio, Max is pretty good at informing the team as to what he's feeling in his car. And that's really where it ends at. He doesn't really do much more than that. Whereas Lewis seems to always want to throw out some false information, I suppose you might call it, here and there. I think he sees that as part of the job, and that, you know, that can be a big part of it. But at the end of the day, if the other driver still reads what he's got, and obviously then the team can look at performance, lap time, section times. You know, if Max is complaining about his tires going off very quickly, but he's still going faster than anybody else, then he's doing okay. You know, that's a relative thing. If Max is saying his tires are good and he's going slower than everybody else, then obviously there's a problem somewhere. So you need to be able to get the information from the driver, good solid information, and then read it into the race and make your decisions from there. And I think, as I always call it, you know, strategy is a living thing. It's you can't set it in the motorhome before the race starts. You can have a couple of guidelines and a couple of ideas, but at the end of the day, again, it's a bit like being competitive. You've just got to do a better job than the other teams are doing at that point in time in the race. And if you don't do that, then you'll suffer. But I think in my book, Red Bull are slightly better at reading a situation and making the decisions than Mercedes are at this point in time. And obviously Mercedes have won 7 world championships, so they don't do too badly. But I think Red Bull are a little bit better at reading it, and they're a bit better at sort of committing to it and driving with it than Mercedes are. So there's a lot less complaining from Max about stuff than there is from Lewis. And that can all play part of it, because when you're complaining to your team are being forced in a direction, or they're forced to think in a different direction than they would do themselves. So because they're going to try and satisfy the strategy required, and they're going to try and satisfy the driver as well. And sometimes those two don't go together. So again, very, very close between the two of them. I wouldn't say I could call it, but I would give Red Bull that little bit of a head start.
Yeah, I was going to just add to what Gary was saying about the part that Hamilton plays in the strategy calls, and I think that's a very good point. And I think it's partly Lewis has in the past done some extraordinary things that the strategists going into the race didn't think would be possible, which did turn out to be possible. I'm thinking of when he got from wet straight onto slicks that time at Monaco, missing out the intermediate, and so saving on a pit stop. And also he was going to do Silverstone on a very aggressive one-stop versus Bottas's two. And or one, two versus one, I can't remember which way around it was. But anyway, he was about to pull something off that they didn't think going in was going to be possible, and he was making it look as though it was. And then the safety car came out, so we didn't get to see it play out. But he's done several things like that where he has not overruled, but just had different ideas about the best way to do it. And it's usually to do with his confidence and how he can make the tyres last. And sometimes that just throws a curveball in. It just makes it unnecessarily complex. But sometimes it's enabled them to win a race. So it is, yeah. It's not a straightforward thing, and it's a like Gary says, it's a living organism, and it's changing all the time according to circumstance. And you just how a team reacts is very much the driver and the relationship the driver and the team feeds into the dynamics of that every time.
How about the fundamental facts of which team is perhaps better at just getting the most out of their package on a given weekend? Do we actually see any differences between the two of them in terms of their simulations, how they work through the weekend, extracting that maximum? Would you favour one over the other in terms of that, Gary, or are they both pretty strong?
I think they're both pretty strong. I mean, we used to see it a little bit more, I think, where we would see when the Ferrari were competitive 2018-19, you know, you'd see Mercedes would arrive at the track and bash, you know, they did a good lap time. Ferrari on the Friday would be, you know, in the 10th or 12th type thing. But once they had Friday night back at the factory and doing some simulation, by Saturday, they were very competitive again. And that seemed to be, you know, back at base. That seemed to be lack of preparation going to the event and being able to recover during the event, which is, you know, usually quite a difficult thing to do, to be honest. But I think between Red Bull and Mercedes, we're seeing them arrive at a race meeting now. 95% of their performance is there. You know, you just have to twiddle in the knobs that little bit. So unless it's a big thing, the track change in Turkey, whereas the grip level was very high to begin, you know, much, much higher than last year. Unless a big change like that in the track surface or the weather conditions or whatever, then I think both teams arrive in a very, very close level of competition. The big thing is, you know, reading when somebody is running more fuel or less fuel, or engine modes better or worse, because that can make, you know, there's a second difference there easily. And So we're talking about battling during the practice session. We're talking about battling sort of for a tenth of a second whenever we really have no idea. And the teams have very little idea as to each other's fuel load or engine mapping performance. So it's very, very difficult until chips are down come qualifying as to really know where anybody is. Usually you get a sort of indication, but I think both teams are very good at arriving at the track in a very good level of performance, and then it's just about trimming the little odds and sods. So if you arrive on a Friday and you're well behind, you're probably going to stay behind, to be honest. Maybe not by as much, but you're still going to stay behind.
Mark, do you feel there's any advantage to Mercedes by the fact that they're the winning team of the moment, and that Red Bull, having had those years of defeat, might be a little bit either rusty or a bit too desperate? Or do you not see any signs of that kind of thing making a difference?
No, I don't think so. I think Red Bull are very focused and very quite simple, really, in how they approach the task. And they just go about, I think, take the lead from Max in that. It's quite a binary approach, really. They just go about maximizing the car. I would say that the Red Bull looks easier to get tripped up by a situation like Turkey, where the grip was different to expected. And we saw something similar in Hungary when the temperature skyrocketed. We had something like 60 degrees on track temperature. So it looks as though maybe it doesn't have such a wide window, and that can occasionally trip them up when something unexpected happens. But I don't think you don't think there's anything in the approach of the team that looks suspect.
And of course, when we're talking about the teams, we also have to have a look at the number two drivers, Mark. We talked before about the potential of Valtteri Bottas and Sergio Perez to be the swing votes, if you like, in this title battle. Which of those two do you think is best equipped to do the job for their teammate and team in the run-in based on recent form?
Kind of depends what that job description turns out to be in the moment. Because if it's to be fast enough to be in play as a strategic place blocker, sort of be within the pit stop window of the opposition, limiting their options, then it's Bottas. Because Perez can only occasionally qualify well enough to do that role. He's usually, you know, behind a McLaren or a Ferrari or an AlphaTauri, and by the time he gets past that, he's too far behind to play that role. That's been his problem this year. But if it's to be a physical wheel-to-wheel barrier, then you'd say Perez, because as we saw against Hamilton in Istanbul, he's very feisty in battle and very hard and doesn't give up an inch. Bottas can be hard and physical if he's in a belligerent mood, but you also saw Verstappen just sail past him without any resistance at Sochi. So it depends on the situation, really, and I think we're going to get both of those situations coming into play over the six races.
Yeah, I think one of the things is we haven't really seen Perez as competitive as we think he should be or expect him to be honest, in the Red Bull. So maybe he's got something to come, and obviously Mexico is one of the races, so there'll be a lot of home support there for him. But I think we've still got to see him, as far as pure speed's concerned, be able to qualify better, more consistently. So he could come into the mix, but I do agree with you know, the Bottas situation with Hamilton, I'm sure he will help Hamilton, but I think he wants to move on from Mercedes, saying, look, you know, I wasn't all that bad. You know, a couple more wins than that would do no harm. It's going to be how it plays out, as I say, with who's running where. But I think if it was the other way around with Perez and Verstappen, Perez knows that he's got no chance anywhere. He's got his drive for next year, so he would definitely black and white help and fight harder, I think, for Verstappen, and Bottas would probably fight for Hamilton. So another interesting dynamic. But, you know, there's others there. There's Carlos Sainz, there's Charles Leclerc, there's Lando Norris, there's Pierre Gasly. You know, they're all guys that can be in there having a go nowadays. So strategy could play out. Those guys become a very important task, a very important part of the task of winning the World Championship.
It's also quite interesting that both Bottas and Perez are having probably what could potentially be their strongest runs of form at the end of the season. Bottas has been pretty strong since Monza, since all of his future was sorted out and settled, and he knows what he's doing. That does seem to have got him a little bit more back in the zone, as it were. Perez felt that he has had a bit of a turnaround in recent races. Turkey probably should have qualified a little bit stronger, and in fact he looked destined to, but he reckons he's a bit more on top of the car now. I don't think we're going to see him do anything extraordinary in qualifying because he's Sergio Perez and that's never been his strength, but it'd be interesting to see how that works. And of course, their job isn't just to help the teammates win the drivers. There's a Constructors' Championship as well, which is the interesting one. And you've got to say, Mark, that right now Perez is losing Red Bull the Constructors' Championship, isn't he? That's just a simple question of mathematics, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think Red Bull are probably, even though they get the money from the Constructors' position, I think Red Bull are clearly focusing on Max, and if the Constructors doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. It's not figuring in their calculations, I don't think.
Yeah, I think they just got to play the races as well as they can for Verstappen and then see how it all plays out. But yeah, I can certainly see a scenario where Bottas has to have a few team orders to help out. That would be an appropriate way, wouldn't it? Valtteri Bottas has to give up victory in the last race in Abu Dhabi to give Hamilton the world championship. I'm sure we'd get a very pleasant bonus if he did that. And we should note that Bottas has said he is in principle happy to cede victories to Hamilton. He said he'd have done it in Sochi if it was appropriate. Obviously, it wasn't something that arose in Russia, but he's on record saying he will do it. So yeah. Again, both those two drivers as well will be keen to prove something. I think, as Gary said, slightly different things they're proving. But they are the possible kingmakers, but with different weaknesses, which is what you have with drivers in that class. You have the few superstars, and then you have the very, very good who just have these areas where they're a bit weaker. But to finish off, I'm going to have to ask everyone to put their metaphorical money down. Gary, you first. If you had to bet on who was going to win this world championship, drivers and constructors, if I absolutely compelled you to, where would you go?
I'd go with Verstappen for the drivers' championship, and I'd go with Mercedes for the constructors, just because that's the trend, that's the way it's going. But no other reason than the fact that Max deserves to win a world championship, I believe, and Lewis has won seven already. So at the end of the day, Max has added a lot of spirit to Formula One, a lot of competition he's brought into Formula One. I mean, if he wasn't there, this year would have been pretty drab. So at the end of the day, you know, I think he deserves to get the credibility of winning a world championship for his efforts this year.
How about you, Mark? I know how much you love making predictions.
I can't argue with Gary on the constructors. That's got Mercedes' name on it, I think. But I would have gone for Max, but Gary's already gone for Max, so I'd be quite happy arguing the case for Hamilton as well. You know, if it was a debate in society, I wouldn't really worry about which man I'd been allocated for that. So yeah, because Gary said Max, I'll say Lewis, but I would have gone for Max if Gary hadn't spoken first.
the one thing I will say for sure, and backing Mark up here, is there will be a world champion.
that's the sensible bet, because that'll definitely, you know, it won't pay out much, but it'll pay out something, and that's the way to be right. Yeah, I mean, I'm in much the same position. I think you can make a case for either. It's funny because you kind of look at the way the momentum's gone, you think, well, maybe with the car performance, it's edging Hamilton's way, but then you think, but the last three races, Hamilton hasn't scored as many points as he ideally should have as well. So actually, is Verstappen doing better? It feels a bit like it's going to go to Verstappen with the constructors to Mercedes, but I think it's going to come down to all these countless little turning points over these next six races. It's so marginal, which is why I'm just hoping that it just goes down right to the very end. I know, contrary to what social media may think, generally those of us covering Formula One, we don't really mind who wins. We just hope it's really interesting and it is a worthy winner at the end. And both of these drivers would be worthy world champions by definition, wouldn't they? Because they've put on an amazing, fantastic show this year. And I think it's the fight that's the real thing to celebrate rather than the final outcome. So everyone's a winner in my book, but there's certainly going to be some amazing twists and turns. Well, thanks very much to Gary Anderson and Mark Hughes for your insight. Head to therace.com. Don't forget the hyphen. There's loads to read there from Gary, Mark and the whole team. Check out our sister podcasts, including the Race IndyCar podcast and Bring Back V10s. And of course, have a look at our YouTube channel. We're going to be working our way towards the US now. Hopefully they'll let me and Mark in. And we'll be back soon with everything you need to know from the United States Grand Prix.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.